Working Cows Podcast, episode 358. This episode is brought to you by Ranch Right. This episode is also brought to you by the Wine Glass Ranch.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, recorded exclusively in the Understanding Ag Studios, and this episode is brought to you by Ranch Right. There are three guarantees in life: death, taxes, and paperwork. Ranch Right can help you avoid one of them. If you're a successful business, you are probably paying some taxes, but that doesn't mean you have to be stuck inside preparing your paperwork for the accountant. Enlist the team of financial experts at Ranch Right to get you back outside doing more of what you love. They are committed to providing you with actionable financials so that you can build a profitable business and create generational wealth. While some things in life are inevitable, being mystified by your numbers doesn't have to be one of them. If you're ready to entrust the paperwork to a team that actually enjoys this type of stuff, visit RanchRightLLC.com and get back outside to the things you enjoy today. Very excited to be joined today by Brett Davis. Brett is a YouTuber, a horse trainer, has a killer Patreon up, and you'll find links to everything that he's got going on in the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/358. Also wanted to let you know, if you missed the episode dropped Friday, then you can go back and listen to that at workingcows.net/357. Talked to Alejandro Carrillo about managing in the desert and about what we can learn about managing for drought from him. And that was to let you know about an upcoming webinar, which will also be linked in the show notes page for today at workingcows.net/358, where you can go and sign up to join us for a webinar coming up this Thursday at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. I'll be talking to Alejandro Carrillo and Jim Falstick about managing for drought. The title of the webinar is Drought: Plan Now or Pay Later. So check out the show notes page for today. Click on the link to the Zoom webinar and get signed up, and we will see you there. Very excited, as I said, to talk to Brett today about keeping young families mounted. How do we go about keeping young families on horses that we can trust, and then also just continuing to progress and get better as families, as riders? How do we train kids to become good riders of horses, good people who are mounted on good horses? That's kind of the direction we're going for today. So, Brett, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Absolutely. I'm super happy to be here. Excited to get a chance to talk with you.
So just, you know, I think as people do on YouTube, I kind of stumbled across your channel here a couple of weeks ago and really appreciated it. Jumped on the Patreon and started supporting you there. And
thank you.
Really appreciate the content you're kicking out there, and very practical and helpful stuff. So what piqued my interest, or what I kind of wanted to talk to you today about, was how do we go about keeping a young family mounted? So I've got kids are getting older all the time, as they tend to do.
Right.
But the oldest one's 15 and the youngest one is 9. Got four of them, and it's always seems like a constant battle to keep that young family mounted. And you know, I think that there's probably in my mind a couple of different strategies, and you can throw in other ones that you can think of there. Our strategy for the last few years has been to be the place where old sorrel horses go to die, and
right.
Buy and just either acquire or buy retired ranch ponies, and you know, put a young kid on them for a few years, and then, you know, eventually you go out there and find them in the pasture and dead, and you bury them and you move on to the next one. And the other strategy to me is to buy young horses and train them, but then that seems to be a bit of a risk. So maybe there's a good way to do that, to make them useful for young kids and some of those things. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming at this conversation from. I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of those strategies and other ones you can think of.
Well, I'll walk you through my thought process, and I'll try to make it as quick as possible. But the way I was raised, I had my old favorite bestest horse that I grew up with. I got her when I was six, and she was 6 months older than me. And the last time I ever rode her, I was 22 and had my PRCA card and was making a living riding Bronx, and she bucked me off then. And from the time I was six until the last time I rode her, she bucked me off whenever she felt like it. And it didn't matter if I'd been riding her every day or hadn't been riding at all or this or that or the other thing. So that was, I don't think that was really the right way to go. Put a six-year-old kid on a six-year-old horse.
I had a similar experience. I was older.
Right.
I was older, but I was the one who rode the only mare that we had, and I was definitely the one who rode her for the first time in the spring every year because she was gonna buck.
Right. And then moving on from there, you know, I started starting colts when I was 11, and right, you know, starting colts for pay when I was 11. And that first experience, my uncle went to, this was in Wyoming. He went to up to the Rosebud Reservation and just bought a handful of horses. And they were like between 4 and 8 years old. And that first set, he'd forefoot them and knock them down and roll them into my saddle and put me on them. and so... That's how I came up. That's where my younger years at horseback were. And I'd never planned on having children. And then, whoops, then we had children. And so I didn't really have a game plan. And at first my plan was, well, I'm going to raise them just the same way I was raised on, you know, in terms of horsemanship. I knew a lot of guys my age that are in this business, and they were saying, well, one thing about it, my kids are always going to be mounted. They're not going to ride the crap I had to ride. And I always said, I'm going to make sure mine ride the crap I had to ride. That's a great idea until your baby girl is 6 years old and wants to ride. And then you're like, yeah, never mind, you know? And so, the way we've been doing it, and mine are 11, 9, and 7. The way we've been doing it is kind of the same as what you talked about is this is where old ranch geldings come to die. It's a little bit different scenario. We've got an old horse that I've used for a pony horse and a snub horse for years and years and years. Showed him, used him, traveled him all over the world. He's one of them. Another one of the horses that's in the kid string is, and she is only 7, I think. But I took her to the Snouth Victory Cowboy on her, used her. And then another one is just an older ranch horse. And he's not that old. He's 12, maybe. So not that old, but in some cases, it's not the years, it's the miles. and that's the route I've gone. My kids are old enough, and you know, I start colts for a living. So my kids are old enough that the oldest, dang sure, has spent a lot of time on a snub horse snubbing me when I'm starting colts. And I've let him put the first ride on a handful of like 18, 20-month-old fraternity-style colts where he's just a test dummy. Just hang on, boy. You're just going to sit there. And I move him around. So he's done a little bit of that. The younger two haven't done those things yet. But in my mind, this idea of, well, I've got a young rider that doesn't know much, and I've got a young horse that doesn't know much, that would be the same as if I gave one of my boys a 22 and the other one the shells and said, go learn how to be marksman. Go on, get out of here. Go figure it out. You know, that's going to end badly.
Yeah, here's some kerosene and some fire.
yeah. And another friend of mine, an older friend of mine, he put it really well. He said, well, when you're young and you're first learning how to drive, you're way better off to be in a medium-sized vehicle with an automatic transmission and everything works and you just learn how to drive. You don't start anybody off in a Freightliner with 18 gears. You know, that's, yep. That's, well, that's not the way you're supposed to learn how to drive. I guess some people probably did. And that's, so that's how I feel on the old horse, young horse deal. I think that the old campaigners, the worst thing we can do, especially for like those old ranch horses or old show horses or something like that, the worst thing we can do is retire them, like totally retire them. You know, that's how they get old and get sore. But I think them having a second or maybe even a third career, packing a kid around for a kid to learn where to put their hands, where to put their feet. I think that's best. You know, the school of hard knocks worked for me, but I think there's a lot of people that went through the school of hard knocks and ended up playing tennis, you know, saying the hell with this.
Yeah. Right. And you know, on top of that, the potential for injury, right? I mean, if all you do is end up going to play tennis, you got out good.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. And then of course there's the potential for injury with our kids, which that's something that as parents, we all have to think about. But for these young horses too, well, no matter what the young horse is, there's a big time investment in that. You know, even if it's just some dink you got out of the sale barn, which that's a bad idea for a kid, but even if that's the route you go, you've still got the investment of the initial purchase and you've got the health and the feed and the this and that. Well, a kid doesn't know how to keep a young horse from hurting itself.
Right.
And that's something that's actually is, you know, like I say, as a guy that rides colts for a living, that's a big part of my day to day deal is keeping young horses from hurting themselves just by being young horses. Kids don't know how to do that. Old campaigners, old ranch horses that know the deal, they already hurt, but they know how to keep from injuring themselves. So we got to think about not injuring our kids, but we also got to think about the investment we have in these horses and not letting that get injured.
Right, for sure. How do you think about this? I mean, are you thinking that there is a place for training these horses, training young horses, and then what's kind of the process of getting kids onto them? I mean, is there a process that you have gone through, or is it always just to this point been, you know, like you said, the old campaigners?
Well, so with my own kids, like I said, my oldest, he's just got to where he's kind of starting some colts and this and that, and we're starting into that. But I've over the years had a lot of other people's kids. You know, somebody call me up and say, "Hey, we're sending the boy out for the summer to ride colts with you." And yeah, there definitely is a process, but it darn sure has to be. When somebody sends their 14-year-old kid out to the summer to ride colts with me, they're not helping me. You know, that's even more work. It's, and I do it for my friends and stuff like that, but it's, that's even more work for me to get that colt started, having that kid help. But I think that's definitely a good thing. And I think that having a little more age on those kids, 14, 15, 16 years old, where they're more mature, are better able to handle their emotions, understand their bodies a little better. And, you know, of course, at 16, when you're a male, that there's a lot of stuff going on in your body you don't understand, but just the physical mechanics, you pretty well got figured out by 16, hopefully.
Yep.
And I think that's better to wait a little longer like that than to try to get these kids starting colts or riding young horses at a younger age, because no matter how you do it, no matter what age you start, no matter who your teacher is, you're going to develop some of these bad habits we all have them. And I've got a list of them of my own of bad habits I have, in terms of my writing. But a lot of them are because I started so young and I wasn't strong enough. I wasn't fast enough. And then I got scared on occasions. And so made up for it by doing these little things that I've spent the whole rest of my life trying to break. So yeah, I do have a process for starting these young people with young horses, but it's like I say, it's a deal where I'm holding their hand every second. There's very little of it that's not supervised, other than like the catching and grooming part.
Right. And most of that is that taking a place in the context of a round pen.
Yeah. In the context of a round pen, for sure. We started all of our kids riding in the round pen on a broke horse bareback. And then, you know, going around there bareback loose and then finding their seat and then able to hold their hands out, you know, like an airplane, and the left hand up, now the right hand up, touch your nose, this and that, just so they could find their seat. And I think that's a really great way to start kids. I wasn't allowed to ride with a saddle when I was a kid until I could take my little Welsh pony. If I could take her at a full lope, bareback, lean down, grab a handful of grass and come back up on her.
Hmm.
And I spilled a million times trying to be able to do that, 'cause I wanted to ride with the saddle so bad I could taste it, 'cause I wanted to be Will James. And again, I don't think that the way I was raised is necessarily the right way. I didn't make my kids do that. But that's how we taught our kids to ride, was in a round pen, bareback. Then now as you get older, and you and I are talking about young people with young horses. Yeah, I think it should most definitely be in a round pen. And it shouldn't be, at least to begin with, I don't think the horse should be at liberty in any way, shape, or form, whether you're on a pony horse with a long line or whether you're a foot with a long line. I don't like to work horses anymore. I hardly work a horse loose in the round pen anyway. Horses that have 90 or 100 rides on them that I'm just kicking them in there because it's Sunday and they've had the weekend off, I'll kick them in that round pen, just chase them around. But most of those young horses, I won't do anything where I don't have control over them, don't have my hands on them. And I think that's, with young people riding young horses, I think that's important too. Like I said, whether you do it afoot or you're on another horse, I think at least in the beginning, it should be in a really controlled situation.
Right. Earlier, you were talking about learning to drive in an 18-wheeler with a, you know, with a semi or with, you know, 18 right, gears right. And all that. And I knew that wasn't the moment for this illustration, but now is the moment for this illustration. I heard Richard Petty one time say that his dad wouldn't let him on or in a four-wheeled vehicle until he had done certain tasks on a motorcycle. And,
awesome,
you know, he had to get out there, scare himself, you know, probably dislocate some bones a few times on a motorcycle before we moved him on to four wheels, because you can certainly go faster, farther on four wheels than you can on two wheels. And then the consequences for failure are higher. And so that sounds a lot like the putting them on bareback, you know, put your right hand out, put your left hand out, touch your nose, all that kind of stuff. Getting that balance, getting acquainted, acclimated exactly. with how you sit on a horse. And I think that's a good part of that.
Well, and I, by the way, I love your analogy. But to reiterate the bareback part, I don't know if this is what my parents were thinking, but this is a big part of what my wife and I were thinking when they started riding, was that, they're young people, you know, and like preteen, they're not coordinated enough to not get hung up. In, you know, if they fall off and to not hang a foot in a saddle, to hang a foot in a rope or anything like, I don't let my kids pack a rope on their saddle. If they want to rope something, I'll give them my rope and then they can rope something if they want. But they're just not coordinated enough. And, that was one of my big fears when they first started riding, is just getting tangled up in something. And so the bareback part, you take a fall, like, yeah, that sucks, but you know, little tiny humans are built to fall. That's why they're, that's why the sutures in their head aren't all fused together. You know, they're built to fall. And you know, if a horse steps on you or rolls over you or whatever, like that hurts, but, and you might get a broken bone or whatever, but that's not a big deal. But a foot hung in a rope or a saddle or a set of reins or something like that, that's real. I mean, I've had it happen. I've hung a foot in stirrup on several occasions, and knock on wood, always came out of it completely unscathed. But that's real stuff there. And so that was a big part of my deal with the bareback, but with your Richard Petty deal too, that's also, if you learn how to do something without the dependency of the motorcycle to the four-wheeled vehicle deal. A four-wheeled vehicle, yeah, you can go faster, you can get in bigger wrecks, but it's also a hell of a lot more stable.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can real quick get too cocky too fast.
Exactly.
And to me, if you've got stirrups, it's the same way. If you don't have any stirrups, then you have to ride that son of a gun. I'll give you an example. This has been 10, 12 years ago. A saddle maker asked me if I'd take his kid for the summer with me to ride colts. And that kid was 19, 18, 19, I don't remember, 17. I don't remember how old he was. And he could ride, you know, shoot. He'd grown up on a little ranch and he could ride and this and that. And the particular place where I was at, and I had another guy my age that had similar experience to me. We could handle it, but they were rank horses. And we had like 120 to start that summer, just the three of us. And they were tough to get around. And this poor kid got bucked off every day, 2, 3, 4 times a day. It was just part of the day. Well, he got bucked off again. And we just kind of rolled with it. But in the evenings, the other older guy and I, his name's Kyle, in the evenings when everything was said and done and everything was put away and we were all done, we'd put that kid on one of my broke horses on a lunge line and make him ride bareback. And we'd just make him trot around on a lunge line and then lope around on a lunge line. And he would fall off, you know, 12, 15 times a night. And then when he got where he could ride, then we blindfolded him and then he'd fall off 12, 15 times a night. And then when he got where he could ride, we'd put blindfolds and earplugs on him and just take away all his sensory and make him do all these things. By the end of the summer, that kid entered a ranch hand bronc riding, and I mean spurred a bad one down. And it was just a matter of just, and that's what I'm talking about with young people and young horses. You just have, it's more work than just working the horse yourself. But you just have to have hands on and you have to be there and be part of it. And every little thing, you know, with that young man, the guy that was my age that was with us, Kyle, he had a stick, and every time that kid would fall off, Kyle would whack him with a stick. And that was his method of teaching: stop falling off or I'll whack you with a broomstick. I don't know if that's the best method of teaching or not, but it seemed to work. You have to be in on it. You have to be part of it. Otherwise it's like I said about giving the one boy the gun and the other boy the bullets and go figure it out yourself.
Right. But I mean, what are you teaching them as you take away senses, you're teaching them to feel the horse, right?
Exactly.
Teaching them to know where's the horse going based on where he's at now and the direction I feel his body moving. And those are, I mean, really important lessons when you have a saddle between you and the horse. If you don't know how to feel that, you know, you're at a disadvantage.
Exactly. And this is maybe a little off topic. But it's kind of funny where I came to understand that difference between taking away a sensory and being able to feel what's going on. there was a really, really, really neat picture, and this would have been in the early 90s, of Tuff Heideman riding a bull at Cheyenne, and he's got sunglasses on, and he just looks so cool. And, you know, I was like 14 or something, and Tuff Heideman was my hero, and I rode bulls too. And so I tried doing everything with sunglasses on there for a little while. And just with sunglasses on, it just changed my depth perception enough that I dang sure couldn't ride a bull or a bucking horse in it. And I could barely ride a horse with sunglasses on. And it was something that stuck in my mind. If you change that sensory a little bit, then you really got to pay better attention with your body and with your seat and with your legs and with all the other sensories you have. And so that's why we blindfolded that kid and then put earplugs on him and this and that. You know, end of the day, it worked out. I don't know if that's what everybody listening.
This is not horse training or kid training advice.
Yeah, I'm not saying put a blindfold on your kid and whack them with a broomstick when they fall off. But those are at least ideas. Just and that's definitely not what I did with my kids. But the learning to ride bareback, I think, is a huge deal. Huge deal. And then with my kids also, they went from bareback to English saddles. Again, there's less saddle between you and the horse. You can feel them better.
Did you have to do that in a secret location so nobody would see them or?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want my friends to know I was riding an English saddle, Dad.
I was on a cow ranch in Arizona. The fact that I even had an English saddle would have, as funny as that is, that's actually, I'm totally the opposite. If somebody had ever said something about it, I'd have said, you get on an English saddle, yep. Buckaroo.
Right.
Let's see. I've ridden English a lot, and I've ridden dressage, and I've jumped, not to any like accolade at any way, shape or form. But I've done it enough to know it is way harder.
Yeah.
Way, way harder. Those good jumping horse riders. Are you familiar with the deal on Facebook? They call it Bronc Rider Nation, I think.
No, I don't think so.
It's just a bunch of saddle bronc riders that share pictures and this and that. Well, the only other people that are invited onto that page are show jumpers. And because it's the same deal, the bronc riders tip their hats to him, like, wow, you jumped a 7-foot jump on a 17 hand horse in an English saddle. Yeah, you can be part of the deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my kids spent a lot of time in an English saddle. And again, just you've got less to rely on in terms of your tools, and you've got way more to pay attention to about your horse, about what your horse is doing. And so for a person with a young family, I already discussed that I think the older horses are better. But then when you start them riding with those young people and those kids, I'd start bareback and then go to English or like a bareback pad with the little stirrups, before I'd ever progress to a saddle. And then once a young person is in their teens and is ready to start riding young horses and has fairly good control of your emotions, which again, that's debatable in the teenage years, but has fairly good control of their emotions and has fairly good control of their body, then start riding those young horses. But I think should always have somebody holding their hand. And this is all do as I say, not as I do kind of stuff. Cause I didn't have any of what I'm talking about. When I started riding young horses, there was nobody there holding my hand, helping me, telling me what to do. They just put me on them and sent me. And I just figured it out. And consequently, have a lot of arthritis and ruined a pile of horses trying to figure it out. And that to me, that's not a fair way to do it. I don't want to see that I don't want to see that happen again. That's not how I'm going to do it with my kids.
Let's take a quick break and hear a word from our sponsor today, the Wineglass Ranch. Cattlemen, mark your calendars for Wednesday, April 10th. On offer will be 300 head of bred cows from the Wineglass Ranch. The Wineglass Easy Keepers come from a genetic base of Angus and Hereford Cross. They're a low frame score, 3-4, low milk output, easy fleshing, low input foraging experts. These girls work 365 days a year. They will be selling at Oglala Livestock Auction in Oglala, Nebraska on Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. If you want more information, you can check out videos of what will be offered at WineglassRanchInc.com.
Do you have a way to think about it? And I know it depends on the rider you're putting on the horse, but kind of a way to think about when this horse is broke enough, you know, and I think we both are on the same page. Old ranch horses, great for young kids. Right. But when we start looking at bringing these young horses into the cavvy and when are they ready to be handed off to another rider other than ourselves, what are some of the things that you're looking for?
Well, so I'll discuss the attitude of the rider first before I get into the horse. We'll talk about both, but I'll just use my three kids as an example. My oldest kid, he's got long hair and he plays the guitar and he rides really well, but he just does not care about horses at all. He likes them, but he's not into it, and that's fine. That's whatever. I don't care. But I'll put him on just damn near anything because there's no ego. He doesn't show up with any ego about it. It's just dad put me on this horse and he told me to go do this. And so I'm going to go do it. He just figures out how to make it work. And that's kind of his personality. The next one down, she really wants to show, and she's shown some. She really wants to show. She really wants to be a big time horseman. She's spent a lot of time around big time show horse trainers and you know, she's 9 years old and she'll pick their brains about lead departures and stuff like that. She's got a chip on her shoulder, to be honest with you. She kind of wants to prove she's something. So what am I going to put her on? It's going to be pretty dang broke because she's going to ask him for their soul. You know, the oldest one is, well, dad told us to trot to the backside of this pasture. He doesn't give a damn how we get there or what happens in between. We're just going there. Just that's the goal, get there. She's going to try to prove something on her way. So that's two different kind of horses I'm going to let one ride. But, you know, I'll let the oldest one ride something that's a heck of a lot greener, where she's more liable to blow something up. The youngest one, he's a typical, prototypical youngest child. He's nuts. You know, he's a Will James acting, just the higher they buck, the better he likes it, kind of a personality. And he's never ridden anything that's ever bucked even, but that's just his personality, you know. If the kids are jumping off the haystack and it's four bales high, he's going to climb to eight bales high and jump off. That's just how he is. So with him, I'm taming it down even more. Like, no possible way I'm letting you ride a green horse anywhere. You're going to get a wreck. So that's kind of, and like I say, those are just my three kids. And there's a million different personalities beside that. But first, I consider the kid's personality. Mm-hmm. Now, when we start talking about the horse, what are the things I look for? Well, you know, we got to have the basics down to where when stuff gets tight and things get fast, if I pull on one rein on the snaff a bit, is everything going to shut down? You know, is this the kind of horse that's going to get scared and then build on that? Well, I'm not letting a kid ride that kind of horse. If this kind of horse that spooks, but then looks and makes a decision, okay, we can deal with that. You know, things like that, as far as a checklist, like an ABC deal, I don't know that I really have one, but I kind of think if you had an ABC checklist, I think that's a little more dangerous than feeling it out and just going with gut feeling that, you know, this kid has this personality, this horse has this personality, let's mash them together. And I've gone, whether it's kids or anybody else, I've noticed in this world that hot-minded people work better with hot or with cold-minded horses, and vice versa. Cold-minded people get along better with hot horses.
What do you mean by a cold-minded horse?
Well, so like a cold-minded horse. So I had a horse, a gray horse a few years ago that he'd do anything you want. He was super athletic. He was a neat, neat horse, but he wanted to be caught, saddled, rode, do his job, and then put him away. He didn't want to be petted on. He didn't want to be friends. He wasn't unfriendly, but he didn't want to be my friend. He had his own friends. he just wanted to be used. If you're going to use me, put me away. And like I said, that's another horse. I showed him, he'd do whatever the heck I wanted, and he'd do it exactly the way I showed him do it. But he wasn't part of it. And so I got along great with that horse because I'm a really hot tempered, hot minded, really active kind of person. And so a hotter kind of a horse, their energy just builds on me and my energy builds on them. Where a colder minded kind of a horse that, like, whatever you want to do, we'll go do it. But, you know, we don't have to be friends. I don't need any treats. I don't, just do your thing. Just don't be mean to me, but do your thing and we'll do it. Those hotter kind of horses, my wife, I make a million Norwegian jokes, but her maiden name is Yelmervik. As she's a cold kind of person. And when I say that, I don't mean that she's not loving or anything else, but she's calculated. She doesn't get emotional about things. She's real cut and dry about everything she does. She gets along great with hot horses. I mean, really, really good, because they get hot, they get temperamental, they try to build on her, and they don't get any reaction out of her. And so that's with all people in general. I think you should go hot to cold, hot to cold, hot to cold. But it's the same with kids. You know, if, like I said, my daughter, she's pretty hot, like I am. You know, hot tempered, hot minded, just active, busy. You know, those hotter kind of horses, they're just going to build off of her energy. Where my oldest son, he's the cold tempered, cold minded that I'm talking about, where he's kind of like a surfer kind of a kid. Mm-hmm. He doesn't surf, but that beach bum kind of mentality. And so hotter minded horses, they've got nothing to build on with him. And so they just chill out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there is something to that too, where horses are, especially those hotter minded horses. I know what you're talking about. I think there's something to the fact that they're kind of looking to get a reaction out of you. And when, you know, then it can, like you said, it builds from there. Is that true in your experience?
Oh yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And, you know, this word is so hard for me to say, anthropomorphizing.
Yeah.
That to some extent, because I don't think a horse has the linear ability to be looking to get a reaction out of you necessarily, but in my experience, they are most definitely, there's those kind of horses that are trying to get something happening. They're trying to, maybe even just get a game going, you know, but they're trying to make something happen. And if they can get it off of your personality, they're going to capitalize on that.
Right.
And then what I'm calling the colder minded horses are the ones that they're not interested in something like that. They just want to do their job and go back to eating hay. And so they're not looking for a reason to do something silly.
Yep, for sure. Is there, and I'm sure, again, this depends horse to horse. Some are going to be ready a lot sooner and some are not. I mean, if you've got them matched with the right personality types and those things, but I mean, even still, there isn't like a clean cutoff break of age where horses are going to be ready to be worked into the cavvy. Anybody can ride them. It's going to depend horse to horse. Is that true in your experience?
Yeah, that's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there's no way, cause they're individuals too. And we have to give them that. And, you know, I negate the fact that they're linear thinkers cause they're not, but we have to give them the fact that they're individuals with individual personalities. And so I can't say that, oh, when a horse is 4 years old and got 217 rides on it, then you can put anyone older than seven on it. You know, that's just silly. And some people, I've heard people say things like that. Now, obviously I'm over exaggerating, but I've heard people say things along those lines and it's just not true. Some of them you can, some of them you can't. The horse that I mentioned, my daughter rides and has shown a little bit, he's 19 and got, you know, 16 years of riding on him, and a lot of it hard riding. Not just anybody can ride that horse. He's pretty tough to be around. She gets along with him, but he likes her because she feeds him potato chips. I guess that's why he likes her. But the point is no, you can't throw a dart and say it's this is it. You have to feel it out and reason it out and think about it. And then even then, sometimes it doesn't always work.
Yeah. And again, this is going to depend too, but how much of success with these kinds of things depends on having a minimum amount of work for those horses to do. Like, I think that probably our failing at our house is they get used real hard May through the end of June. And then again, September through the end of November, and then maybe not a whole lot from November to May, you know. I think that probably we would be more successful with some of the younger horses or even some of the, like you're saying, some of the older horses who are not as easy to be around. We'd be more successful if we use them more consistently. Is that true in your experience?
Oh, I think so. The whole overfed and underrode deal, it's funny to me that you bring that up because I experienced that yesterday. I just had to get around a little set of cows and normally something I would do on a colt that's been getting rode 5 days a week pretty consistently for a couple of months. But I wanted to bring my pups with me, and so I wanted a broke horse in case the pups got stupid. And so I jumped on an older horse I've got that's real experienced, but I haven't touched him in 3 weeks. And he was a blithering idiot. That's not his fault. It's my fault. Overfed and underrode. And so, yeah, I think if there's I don't think there necessarily has to be a minimal amount of work or a maximum amount of work, but there, I think your best bet is to have some consistency in this horse knows he gets rode 5 days a week, 4 days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week, whatever the case is. But that anytime we're riding them hard for 2-3 months and then they're pretty well kicked out for 3 months, but once in a while we grab one up and step on them, we're doing a disservice to them. Mm-hmm. For sure, whether it's an old horse or a young horse. And then definitely if we throw a kid on them, then we're doing a disservice to everybody. You know, we've got a pretty regimented deal as far as the kids riding, and, you know, small business owner, homeschool, yada, 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 regimented as we try to be, trying to get those kids horseback 3 days a week is a chore. Mm. But that's what we try for is 3 days a week. They're all horseback. I really don't like all three of them horseback together without me there, if I can help it, because that's a recipe for a wreck. But we try to get them all horseback 3 days a week get them riding around. And there again, it's always, there's always eyes on, at least if not hands on, there's eyes on from an adult of, hey, you know, and that's another thing too. A kid gets to riding pretty good and gets comfortable with a horse, and loping's fun. Everybody likes to lope. And so you get a kid on a horse and you look up and next thing you know, he's been loping that son of a gun for 25 minutes. Just flock. Hey, whoa, settle down, kid. What the? You know, kid doesn't know any better. Young horse doesn't know any better. Well, old horse maybe doesn't know any better. So that's important too. Even if we go off of the safety deal and we go off of the when it's appropriate to ride, there needs to always be an experienced adult around there. And again, this is me talking from experience. I was just turned loose and I rode a lot of horses way harder than they needed to be rode. Not because I was trying to ride them down, just because I was having a hell of a good time.
Mm.
You know, I was turned loose on a big ranch. But you want to lope? Heck, I want to lope too. Let's lope for 7 miles. You know? So yeah, I don't know that there's a number, but those horses darn sure need to be worked. And I think everybody's going to have a better time, whether it's whichever human is involved in it, older person, younger person, whichever horse is involved in it, older horse, younger horse. I think that's a big deal.
Right.
That they, one thing I want to throw in there though, before you come up with your next point, where I really think kids and horses mesh and where I think they learn the best from each other, and especially young horses, is on the ground.
Mm.
And one of the things we do at my house, the kids clean all the stalls. When a new horse comes in, my wife or I will clean the stall for a couple of days, make sure everything's kosher. And like currently I have a stud horse. It's not mine, but I have a stud horse here, and I don't want the kids clean the stud stall, and that's not the stud's fault. That's my fault. You know, I just don't trust studs, but all the rest of these young horses, those kids they're bebopping around and they're singing stall cleaning songs and they're doing stuff. And pretty quick, these young horses follow them around the stalls and they're sniffing them and trying to figure out what's going on there. And it's like groundwork from the horse's perspective. You know, we groundwork these horses so we can observe them, and letting those kids be around those young horses is an opportunity, in my mind, it's an opportunity for those young horses to observe humans.
Mm.
and see the ridiculous things we do and get used to that. And I know it's made life easier for me riding those young horses, having the kids clean the stalls, gets those colts really, really gentle. But I think it's good for everybody involved.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point. I didn't grow up loving riding. I didn't grow up loving ranching. That has developed over the last decade or so. And so for me, like, I love to get the horses gathered up and go ride when we've got something to do with them.
Right. No, for sure. And just go for a ride just for the sake of going for a ride. Yeah, I don't like that either.
Right. And so, one of the things we've started doing now is we'll saddle a few horses to go and check my son's trap line. He's got coyote and
yep.
all kinds awesome. Of other traps out there.
You awesome. Know,
and we'll
awesome.
Go. So, but is there a program of work or some things that you're trying to pay attention to, trying to work on while you're riding to make it more than just we're riding in a circle? Even if we weren't checking traps, is there something that we could do to say, hey, let's make this a maximally valuable endeavor here to when we've got these horses caught and saddled, let's make this good for us and good for them?
Well, so sometimes it's just got to be fun, right? Sometimes there should be no point to it at all other than going checking our traps. I think for the horse's sake and for the young rider's sake. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you just got to ride.
Sure.
And I think that's really important, because otherwise we're building this relationship in a petri dish. Mm-hmm. I know plenty of people that, you know, they're my age and their dad was a trainer, and so they've ridden all their life, but all they've ever done is train horses. They've never ridden a horse just to go see what's over that hill or check a trap line or anything like that. Mm. And so I think it's really important that there is some time where we're just riding, we're just trotting. And especially when you're with your son, that's the time when he's going to tell you about, you said he's 15. So that's it. When you're just trotting along, checking a trap line, that's the time when he's going to tell you, like, oh, dad, you know, where's this girl I'm talking to? whatever the case may be. So I think that's important. All the rest of the time, and what percentage of time that is to where you're just riding, just to ride, I don't know. That depends a lot on the personality of the kid, and I think the personality of the adult. For my personality, there's not very much of that time. I'm real busy oriented. Mm-hmm. So personally for me, it's way harder to do. But so the percentage of time that is, I can't lay a number on it, but I think there should be some time just allotted for that. All the rest of the time, yeah, I think we should be trying to pass on knowledge and try to build exercises and try to come up with things that let's improve this in your horse, let's improve this in you, let's improve the timing here, let's improve the this and the that. And then how that's done, again, this is coming down again and again to organic stuff. We can't build this kind of stuff in a petri dish. Mm-hmm. One of the big time mentors that I had when I was very young, we'd be riding along in that organic time when we were just riding, just because we're heading somewhere and just BS and just trotting along. And I'm 12, 13 years old. Troy would tell me a story about either himself or somebody that he knew, and here's the situation he got in horseback, and here's how he got out of the wreck, or here's how he didn't get out of the wreck, and this is what he should have done instead. And he'd just tell me these stories. And looking back, most of them probably weren't true. He probably made them up. But he would just tell me these little stories, and then he'd give it a couple of days, and then he'd set me up and get me in that wreck to see what I learned out of that, to see if I was paying attention. Again, not the safest way to do things, but very, very effective. But that's those kind of things. Like when I'm riding around with my kids, it'll be things like, okay, well, you got that horse bridled up pretty good. Let's see if you can bridling him up with just your legs. And, you know, everybody hates loping circles in the arena, but let's go around that bush and see if you can get around that bush and get that horse to bridle up just using your legs and not using your bridle at all. Well, like I said, my oldest is 11, so doesn't have the leg strength nor the leg length to have any effect on any of my horses, getting them bridled up with just these legs, but it's worth a shot, you know. Hey, there you go. That horse framed up two strides with it. Things like that. I don't think, at least for my personality, I don't think dictated exercises where like you're doing a pattern, I don't think that's the way to go. At least wouldn't have worked for me. But I do think that the parent's job is to to know their child and know their horse enough to this works. And then just, you know, in the words of my friend Austin Pale, sprinkle little bits of knowledge on them as you go by.
Yep. That's very good. And I think that that's a great segue to talk about some of the work that you do, and in the way of clinics, because I think that one of the best things is we don't know what we don't know, and we don't get to watch ourselves ride horses and interact with a horse, and where we could have somebody just as a third party observer look at us and say, hey, here's something that would make that more effective, more efficient. And so talk to me a little bit about some of the clinics you've got going on. This will be out towards the end of March at this point, I think. So I don't know what you've got coming up in the way of clinics after that, but be an opportunity to talk about that.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about that. when we talked earlier, when we scheduled to do this, I said, I'm technologically unadvanced in terms of using phones and this and that. That's another part of the part I don't play in marriage, is I don't know when the next clinic is or where I'm going or what I'm doing or why or any of that. I know I'm going to Florida tomorrow. I'm going to go do a clinic. But that's the way my wife and I have worked out our relationship. She tells me when to get on an airplane and where I'm going. And I say, oh, okay, good. And I go and I show up and I say what I had to say and do that. So in terms of I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to plug my clinics and stuff, but I don't know how. I can't. I don't know when the next one is or where I'm going or what I'm doing. But what I do know about those clinics is, in my experience, at every one of them, you've got a handful of people you can help and a whole bunch of other people you just need to be kind to. There's so many different people that end up at a clinic. And so some of it, I've kind of got a following. I'm not Buck Brannaman by any means, but I've got a following of people that come to my clinics continually, and I've worked with them for a couple of years, and I know where we're at. And then I'll get this other person that, is riding in a Textan saddle and just heard there was a clinic in town and came to it. And maybe I can help that person. Maybe I can show them a few exercises. Maybe I can do some things. Maybe not. Just because you're in different kind of tack and a different kind of person doesn't mean I can't help you. But then there's other people that there's not a thing in the world I can do for you. You don't ride good enough. Your horse isn't good enough. I can't help, but I can be nice. And so that's kind of my mantra with the clinics: help everybody you can, and anybody you can't, at least be nice to them.
Right.
And that's kind of a big deal to me, because a lot of these big name clinicians are known for being just complete jackasses to the people that are paying them for knowledge. And to me, that's not cool. But almost all the big name guys you could name, and I'm not going to name any of them, but almost all of those guys I know personally and on a personal level are pretty nice guys. But they've got this persona as a clinician, and I'm sure they're burnt out, this and that and the other thing. But they're just kind of ill to people, and I don't like that. I couldn't do them at all if I had to do it like that.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. But I mean, there is a page on the website. People could go there and say, work with us, you know, and send an email and get it set up and bring you in to do a clinic and all that. I'm assuming that's kind of how that works.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. There's that. And, if somebody wants to contact me, I'm more than happy to, I love getting on an airplane, going somewhere else and going and doing a clinic, and I'll do a clinic about anything. I'm trying to develop some deals where we're doing clinics on real specific things like introduction to the Hackamore and intermediate Hackamore, advanced Hackamore. I hate to say that it's a lost art, because I don't really feel like the Hackamore is a lost art, but I feel like there's a bunch of people that are making it be more complicated than there is. So there's some things that are near and dear to my heart that I'd love to do some clinics about. And I'm happy to do a clinic anytime, anywhere, any place. I don't have a huge clinic schedule. I don't do lots of them. And that's by choice. I don't want to do lots of them. I think it's too easy to get burned out. It's too easy to forget what you're there for. So I only do a few a year, but yeah, anybody that wants to look at it, I'm happy to get on an airplane, go anywhere.
Yep. Very good. And as I said, at the opening, I jumped on your Patreon and I wish I would have had writing someone else's mistake, the series you've been doing. I wish I would have had that when I had this horse that I had about 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. That horse had way more potential than any horse I've ever ridden, but he was just too broken.
Yeah.
Somebody along the way had broke that horse mentally, and I was not the guy to fix him, but man, he was pretty fun to ride when he had his brain working in the right direction.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for being on the Patreon deal. And the little blurb I'll give about that, when somebody first told me about Patreon, I said, "What the heck is Patreon?" The person that was telling me about Patreon said, "Oh, it's basically just a deal where you set up where people that want to support you just donate money to your cause." And I said, "Well, what do you do?" And he said, "Oh, you don't have to do anything." and I said, no, that's not how I roll. I'm going to do something. Patreon has been a bunch of fun because I can do some stuff that I wouldn't necessarily put on YouTube, you know, because it's long, it's drawn out, it's more in depth, et cetera, et cetera. For instance, the Fixing Somebody Else's Mistake series, and I can do these series. So Patreon's been a bunch of fun to me. I really, really think the platform's cool, and I'm enjoying it personally. On the deal about that horse, that over the course of my life, I've had to fix so many mistakes that somebody else made, and I'm sure somebody else has had to fix so many mistakes I've made. It's just been a cool opportunity to show this is how it's done. You don't beat them into submission. You don't ride them into submission. You just gotta be kind to them.
Yeah, very good. And I'll have links to all that in the show notes page for today. I'm not exactly sure what that number is going to be yet, but it will be in the intro and the outro for today. I'll direct people that direction and I'll have links to all that in the show notes page. And speaking of Patreon, we're going to stick around here for another 10 minutes if you got time and capture a little bit of bonus content.
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, very good. Well, Brett, thanks for now for this portion of the content. Thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I had fun and I hope anything I said made sense to somebody.
Very good stuff there with Brett. As I said, go check out the show notes page for today and get signed up for the webinar. Check out everything Brett's got going on and his website to get in touch with him about bringing him in to do a clinic and all that. Really, really appreciate his perspective and the way that he articulates those things. So looking forward to next week on the Working Cows podcast. Going to welcome back Elaine Fraze. Always a pleasure to talk to Elaine. And we're going to talk to her about training the next generation of ranch managers. How do we prepare kids from a young age, children, young adults, even into adulthood? How do we prepare them to be prepared to lead the businesses that we are passing on to them? So that's kind of going to be our theme for next time with Elaine Fraze, and we will see you again on another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.